Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you with your host, Corey Smith, and co-host, Eric Howdige. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and APCO Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Director with EasyCare. Today, I'm being joined by my co-host, my partner in crime, Eric Howdige. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Corey. Appreciate that.
We're going to title this podcast, Driving Excellence, Bridging Fixed Ops and Sales for Dealership Success. Eric, tell everybody who our guest is today.
I am excited. It is Sean Reyes from Recall Masters, and we have an exciting show today. Sean, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your title, the company that you work for.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast, guys. Love any opportunity to talk about recalls and help our community at large, help, you know, not only serve our consumers, serve our brand, but also resolve the world of this recall nuisance that puts us all in danger when we hit the road. So yeah. I'm Chief Marketing Officer at Recall Masters. I've been around since darn near the beginning. In fact, telling you guys, I celebrated my 10-year anniversary. We started off almost operating out of a broom closet in Orange County. And lo and behold, we've got a huge facility and staff all throughout the country helping dealers resolve this recall crisis. And we also have a huge enterprise division that provides our data in several other organizations that also serve the dealer community. Because everybody's wanting to know, how do I validate whether a certain vehicle needs a recall or not? And so we provide that data in other third-party enterprise solutions. So, and then we work directly with a lot of huge organizations that manage large amounts of fleets. I don't want to drop any names because those guys will pound me in the face and say, you're not supposed to say anything like that. But I will say that you're right. It's become a lot more visible today than 10 years ago. So it's not going to stop. It's not going to slow down. I'll share with some of the detail that I've pulled from this year's 2024 State of Recalls, which sheds a lot more insight on what's currently happening in the world of recalls today. And then I take that and I plan, and this is the first year I did it. I went back through 10 years of data, looking back as far as 2015 recall compliance. So that is the repair of those recalls that were announced back in 2015 all the way up to today. So it's very interesting data. I wish it was more optimistic, but the good news is there's organizations like myself and a lot of dealers that are really now paying more attention than ever. But the pace of recalls seems to really outpace our ability to, in other words, we're creating more recalls than our ability to even fix all the recalls that are currently on the pipe, much less go back 2015. So great stuff ahead. But yeah, I think for dealers that are looking to reengage customers who may have already defected to the aftermarket, those recalls represent a great opportunity to reintroduce some of these customers back into the dealership for a safety intervention that comes at no cost to the consumer. I don't know how many other things that we can do at the dealership that cost $0. I mean, the coffee and the donuts might be free in the lobby, but there's probably not a whole lot that we can offer consumers to re-experience what servicing looks like back in the dealership. And recalls are just that opportunity. So we're excited to be here, excited to help our dealers.
So let's elaborate on that a little bit. What do you believe are the biggest challenges fixed ops departments face today in retaining customers beyond their warranty period, and how can dealerships overcome them?
Well, some of the problems or challenges are bigger than my ability to really kind of summarize in just a few sentences. I will just say this, that consumers have a choice now more than ever. And so that's what we're really competing with at the dealership level, is that once those vehicles start to extend beyond the warranty period, you know, those consumers and those vehicle owners are choosing to go to the aftermarket for all kinds of reasons. It could be, you know, nobody's picking up the phone when I call in, a perceived expense, right? Like technicians and factory parts cost more than if I just went to the you know, garage around the corner. The average consumer or vehicle owner doesn't really understand, you know, the quality issue and what goes into vehicle maintenance for my particular brand. So there's a lot of there's a lot to overcome for the average consumer and the average dealer to just say, oh, it's just this. If we just do this one thing or these couple of things, I think it's all of it put together. And knowing that every consumer is unique and different and they value different things, we've got to be good at it all. And that's just a fact.
So, I love that.
Yeah. So let's take the recall part of it, because this is your expertise, right?
Right.
How can they take that challenge and grab that customer that hasn't been to the dealership, hasn't been to the dealership for years, and wow them? What are some things that you could give our dealers that are listening, something that they've never tried before when it comes to a recall?
Well, I mean, some of it starts with the data that you've got. In other words, maybe you're relying on your DMS and you're relying on VINs that are currently in your DMS to reach out to customers via your BDC to say, hey, let's pick up the phone. We've got a lot of vehicles out there in our PMA that we can pick up the phone and call and say, hey, bring that vehicle in for service. That's never a bad thing to do. I encourage every dealer to look for those. I mean, it's a lot of time for your staff. And then you've got to worry about whether you've got parts in stock. And should you be making those phone calls? Probably the worst experience would be to tell me that I've got a recall. I go down there to your store and then find out you don't even have the parts.
Oh, like, yeah.
You've wasted my day. So a lot of it starts, I think recall compliance and a good servicing experience starts with really good data. Not only data about the recall so that I can have a conversation with the consumer to let them know everything from what are the risks involved? Should I drive this vehicle? You guys got a flatbed pickup to pick it? Like, so there's a lot that goes into first those first initial touch points. And that's what I was talking about with regard to recall compliance, not really just being a scheduling thing or a notification thing. It's all of it bundled up together. Like, I listen to the calls that we get out of our centralized contact center. So we have live agents based in the United States, which who does that anymore, right? Well, we do. Because a lot of these phone calls get really complex and lengthy. And these vehicle owners have a lot of questions about, well, can I drive it? And do you guys offer loaner cars? I get out of work at 6, you know, can I drop it off? Is there anybody there that I need to talk to? Do you have parts available? What else comes with this? So there's a lot of questions. A lot of that requires a lot of dialogue. I wish we could just push a button and say, okay, it's all about scheduling. Click here and schedule an appointment. But that's kind of what the OEMs are doing, which is the reason why they're only successfully scheduling recalls appointments about a 2.5% rate. And that's just not good enough. We're not going to resolve this recall crisis waiting for consumers to take action, waiting for them to call one phone number to find out or go to one page on a website to find out, you know, what this recall is, which is written in a very complex manner. The average consumer doesn't know what this says. There's no information about parts availability. There's no information about whether I can drive it or not drive it.
Right.
So there's a lot, and that all happens through our centralized contact center, which is, I call it the one throat to choke. I wanna reach through my phone line and grab the OEM and strangle them for creating this nuisance for me that now I've got to take care of this recall. But if you approach it the right way and we give you the one throat to choke and we answer all your questions and we're efficient at it, and then we can even go through the next steps about sharing the dealer amenities for servicing and taking care of that recall today. and then scheduling appointment. We take care of all of that for you out of this centralized live agent US-based contact center. And all of our communications all funnel into those same into that same location. It's all the same phone number for each dealer. They have a specific phone number that's unique to them, so that when our agents answer the phone, it sounds like it's the recall department from Corey Smith Dodge. And that's the experience. That. Yeah, that's the experience customers want. Like, I want to talk to somebody about what's going on with my vehicle and how we get it repaired.
You know, Sean, you mentioned two things that really highlighted in, and I'm still hanging on to it. And one of the things you said that was really powerful was that you have to be good at everything. And from a service standpoint, when you pick up that phone call from the service department, whoever picks up that call, you have to be good at everything. And you also said live agents. With all the integration of technology that we have today, let's talk about the big one that's been the big one for the last few years, and I think it's going to continue to evolve. Let's talk about AI and its predictive analytics. How is that transforming the service drive experience, both for customers and for service advisors?
Yeah, I mean, AI has a role, and certainly it will play a much bigger role when it comes to managing, you know, your customer base. However, specific to recalls, I don't believe, and from our data, we see this. The issue isn't about scheduling, a deficiency in scheduling or the process in which I schedule an appointment. So, right, if it were just about scheduling, I'd say, you know, why not just have an AI agent answer that question, find an optimum time, and then schedule that appointment. The anxiety that overwhelms a vehicle owner about a recall, and then again, thinking the time and the resources, and I want to know about the dealer amenities that are involved. Like, if I take my vehicle over, like, even our agents will ask, based on the dealer's recommendation, so we set up every dealer with a unique set of qualifiers so that as our agents speak to these vehicle owners, we'll ask them things like, while we've got the vehicle in to take care of that recall, would you like for us to perform any additional work? Now, that opens all kinds of opportunities for other CP work that wouldn't probably happen with an AI agent. So not going to slam the AI agent thing, but again, knowing that the real opportunities and the real challenges lie beyond a robot's ability to extract that in just a simple, you know, string of text. So I think if you really want to deliver on customer service and have that be the core initiative for you when you approach recalls, right? If you're trying to bring these customers who have already defected back out of the aftermarket and back into your dealership, yeah, I mean, you've got to offer a heightened level of service. You've got to roll out the red carpet. You've got to give them a reason to come back into the dealership. And that's,
amen,
that's harder to do today than ever before, because consumers have a lot more choices. And even with the technician shortage, just understand that's apparent everywhere. I mean, even independents are struggling. You know, aftermarket shops are struggling with technician shortage, but they're never going to turn down an appointment. No, they're going to find a way to get you in, you know, and you know, I applaud that. I mean, it's just, you know, I know we, from dealer to dealer, you know, there's certain levels of service that, you know, are either super exceptional or have a lot of, you know, missing gaps. But I think it's important. That's just competition. And you're right, we're competing with the aftermarket. I think we do a better job as dealerships from a quality standpoint to help preserve your asset over the long haul. But you got to think about the average consumer and what's their experience like. And if nobody's answering the phone at your dealership when I'm calling about a possible recall and you can't tell me anything, even if I do connect or I get transferred around or put on hold, or, I mean, that's all part of that experience. And we've got to kind of set that stuff aside and find a way to streamline that, or you find a partner like Recall Masters that lifts the entire burden off the dealership and we just take care of it for you. All you have to do is repair the vehicles.
Yeah, I like that too.
you know, what you're talking about brings so much power and information to people who are in the stores. And if you're not taking notes right now, you're not changing how you're doing things. What are some of the, you work across the country with so many stores, so many markets. What are some of the common mistakes you see service managers make when it comes to that word we always talk about, right? That upselling. When it comes to upselling, how can they change their approach and drive more revenue?
Well, I think the upselling is kind of the, I don't like to use that word because
we don't either.
We don't.
Yeah. I mean,
put it that way.
You know, we're all after chasing after the same thing, the revenue. I can tell you that there's a direct correlation between the experience that you have as early as the scheduling part, right? And calling into the dealership and having that interaction to what happens when the vehicle is, you know, in your service drive and the expectations that a consumer has about the work that's going to be done. If you can have that earlier in the process, you're setting a better expectation for what it's going to look like over the next couple of days while you've got my vehicle in hand. The last thing I want to find out is that, you know, I came in for a brake job and then now you're telling me it's going to be another day because you need the parts to take care of this recall. Like, we should be doing all that stuff on the front end of it. We should be having those conversations with consumers at the point they make the recall, right? Yeah. So it all happens. If you can do it earlier, I find that most consumers opt in. Like, we see, so because of these conversations that we're having with our live agents and these vehicle owners, we're able to secure 54% of the time additional CP work on that initial visit. That's an incredible number. That's more than half of the vehicle owners are saying, yeah, you know what? Take care of this for me, right? Either it's a spillover from what happens during the MPI process, or it's the customer saying, yeah, you know, while I've got it in, I've been hearing some, you know, scraping, or, you know, here in my front left wheel, can you guys take a look at it? All of those opportunities really not only help you extend yourself further into that customer's mindset that they're taking care of me, but you're doing it in a proactive way that allows them to make all the adjustments with their vehicle and what do I need to do as an alternative mode of transportation. So
I think that's the key right there, Eric, is that too often service managers are all about revenue. When if you come from a place of value, right? And to Sean's point, and we preach about it in our training classes, upsell is a naughty word, right?
Good word.
We like to say educate and sell, right? So what you're just talking about is that same foundational core is I'm gonna educate you on this recall, Mr. Customer, and I'm gonna ask you, is there anything else that you want to talk about? And for once sure. The customer feels that they've been heard and they understand what that recall is and that that person on the other line is gonna take care of them, they're more apt to say, yeah, let's take care of, you know, the coolant system and the spark plugs, right? So there's your 54% just on basic understanding what the recall is.
I'll give you some better numbers than that, Corey. So 1 in 4 vehicles on the road today have an open recall, right? If I go back, you know, last 20 years. So that's 25% of these vehicles already. I saw KBB studies that 64% of the vehicles on the road today also need additional work. They're going to end up somewhere in some retail aftermarket garage if they aren't in your dealership, but they're going to need work, whether that's tires or shocks or brakes or whatever. So 64% of the vehicles on the road will end up having some intervention with a garage at some point for service.
Wow.
You don't need to upsell anything. All you need to do is just tackle those two pieces right there. And you're good. I mean, you ought to be good. I think not asking the questions is the problem, and appearing like you're just after revenue. Boy, there are some people that don't need to be service advisors because they're pushing way too hard. And they're like, I should have my brother on the podcast next. He refuses to service at a dealership. And so as a marketing guy, I'm always hitting him with these value propositions that we're using with dealerships to say, would this work on you? And he's just constantly just such a negative Nelly that it's like, I don't even want to talk to him anymore. But I mean, but I wonder how many consumers really feel that way about their interactions with the deal.
That's valuable information, and that's gold. And remove this upsell word from the fixed ops world will bring more value to the people who are being taken care of. And the culture itself. So I totally agree. And having your brother's ideas and perspective on a podcast would be gold, Corey.
Yeah. It's poison, man. Be careful, guys.
I think it'd be a good podcast. I love the little Eric. We wouldn't have to do anything. We just sit back and watch it.
Right? I'm popping in here.
So,
but switching. I think it's important to hear that feedback. I don't know about you guys, I know even within my own organization, people always come to me like, you're the marketing guy. You ought to. And here's the reality. Tell people, I don't set the trajectory of this organization. It's the market. Now, obviously, I'm interacting with the market to, you know, sell and position products and help us develop new products and listen to our cut. But at the end of the day, it's the market that will decide. So if you're having difficulty, something's not right. If you're not selling every single hour in your service department, something's not right, because there's plenty of work out there to be had.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. So shifting gears a little bit, and let's kind of talk about fixed ops and sales. In your experience, how can dealerships align their fixed ops and sales teams to create a seamless customer journey that will improve that retention?
Right, because sales leads to service, service leads back to sales. Hopefully that ecosystem's intact for the dealers. But yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher each day because consumers are shopping for vehicles in a very different manner. Like I think about the way my grandfather bought his Cadillacs for a full generation. He was going to the Cadillac dealer or going to see Cal Worthington Ford in Long Beach to go and, you know, go see Cal, and buy his Ford every year. That's very different than how current customers are doing it, right? And especially if you're purchasing a vehicle maybe, you know, 100 miles away because they have the best price, well, that's going to be a sold, not serviced vehicle to me. And so looking at those relationships with when I sell a vehicle, where is this customer located? And is this the right deal that I want to be giving away a vehicle that will never show up in my service department? So that's kind of the basic behind that.
Yeah. But, I never thought of right? that.
You're thinking about that. But yeah, we're buying vehicles even on the internet and having them trucked across the nation because I found a good deal. So, and it's more so even with the, obviously with used cars, but, I think it's the relationship you have with your service department that will set the tone for whether I want to purchase a new vehicle in the future from this dealership. And it starts with, like I said, you're taking care of those customers at their most critical moment of need, a safety recall that could impact the lives and the health of my family and other passengers and other people that share the road. And so if you're not taking care of me then I don't really think you value me as a customer. And so, but from that experience, you'll find, especially as these recalls, you know, a lot of people think 2025 recalls, or let's say that they're going to come from 2025 model years, and they're not. You see the dissection that some of these vehicles and these recalls span years and years and years. So there's a handful of them that will pertain to this year, but a vast majority of them are from previous years. And you can look and say, wow, like I just saw the other day, there was a massive recall that involved 2015 model year trucks. And so you're going to go out and try to reach those people. You don't have the data. That's, you know, a Recall Masters will find that for you. We have the largest, single largest owner database in the nation with current contact information.
I did not know that.
Right. We don't have a nationwide DMV. So it's every individual state has their own information and their own consumer privacy laws. But at the end of the day, finding those older vehicles is probably the biggest challenge. Even the OEMs come to us directly for that, because they don't keep track of that. They're counting on the dealers to keep track of that. And they would if those older vehicles were still servicing at the dealership. So how do you find those older vehicles? Because here's the real opportunity. So obviously the challenge is, how do I find them? But when you can find them and you can get them in, those vehicles need a lot of work. I mean, they're 2015, especially the trucks. A lot of work associated. It's all CP revenue. And that experience that you have with scheduling the appointment, reaching out to these people, connecting, you know, it gives you an opportunity to compete for that work that would normally go to the aftermarket. So what are you doing to win it back? And it starts with, again, that interaction you might have at the recall level, because there's no cost to these folks. And I'm telling you, when they come in, it's just fix the recall. I don't want anything else. And, you know, our dealers will say, some of these folks are a little tight-fisted. Well, they might be, because maybe the last experience that they have wasn't so good at your store. So, right. You know, but if you can deliver on that, and you can deliver and show them a heightened level and not, quote unquote, upsell, but rather help them protect their vehicle asset, there's other work that goes with that they'll pass on to you 54% of the time. A lot of times,
I'll take that.
I've seen this. I should show you our model year report. We see, you know, $5,000, $8,000 tickets, you know, for people saying, I love my 2015 Lexus. Let me just write a check because, you know, my wife loves that car. We're not selling it. And they'll put all the work into it that it needs. Others are saying, I'm willing to take a test drive today. I got this car that needs $4,000 worth of work. You know, wouldn't it be better for me to contemplate, you know, a new model and trading this in? And so that's an opportunity for dealers as well. If you're having those relationships and those discussions with vehicle owners, you're going to get those opportunities to offer a test drive. I've even had a handful of customers that say, based on a certain model year, they're willing to lend those offer them as loaner vehicles to those customers, hoping that how'd you like that 2025 Lexus? Did you like driving it around the last couple of days? So there's creative things that I think dealers can do to say, how do I reintroduce models to vehicles to vehicle owners that, you know, are just waiting for the experience?
Well, you're right, because I don't know if you saw the report, but now customers are keeping their vehicles almost 13 years, 13 and a half years. So that's huge. Eric, I mean, I don't know about how you feel about this, but I mean, with new technology coming out there, I've got family members coming to me saying, hey, I want to get a new vehicle, and their vehicle's only like 4 or 5 years old. I'm like, why? Well, because it's got a bigger screen and it's got this and it's got that, right? So I think if we come up with a strategy of having sales and service work together, there's that easy handoff where the customer's like, yeah, do I want to spend this kind of money, or do I want to put it down on a newer vehicle, right?
Yeah, and the technology that's in these vehicles really attracts customers. You got the bigger screens. I mean, there's vehicles that have a screen now from door to door, right?
I have one. It's awesome.
I love it. You know, and how cool does it feel to jump in? And now the new technology that's really on the rise is EV vehicles. If you look at a data on these EV vehicles, it's in grow mode. And especially in my area, I live on the west side of the country. I mean, these EV vehicles are everywhere. How could this say?
Sean sees it too.
Listen, I'm going to rip a page out of my brother's, you know, Negative Nelly book and say he doesn't like all those electronics. He sees that as, these are potential recalls. You're going to tell me that, you know, I'm not going to have control over my vehicle. It's going to slam on the brakes in the middle of the highway. And it's like, oh, that doesn't happen. Well, it has happened. It happened with a Nissan Rogue for a few years. So, again, while there's consumers who say, yes, I love all the new technology, all the whiz bang stuff, I'm waiting for the new model to roll out, it probably also explains why so many people are holding on to their vehicles for 13 years. It's not just cost. I've got people, I'm telling you, they're writing they're using their credit card to do $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 of work on a 2016 vehicle because they just don't want the electronics. I should show you what my brother has in his driveway. It's like, and the guy has money. It's not about money. It's about the convenience and safety factor. They put it all into the mixer to say, you know, what's the right value proposition for me? So while EVs and vehicles that have all this technology are cool, there's a whole host of other consumers who wonder about the resale value of an EV if the battery conditions degrade to the point that it's not quite nearly the same as what you, I mean, it's not like a fossil fuel burning vehicle that you can restore. I got a 72 Chevy in the back.
I was just going to ask you how the 72 is going on.
Well, the starter blew up on me, so I got to go get another one of those. But I mean, the good news is I can get underneath the truck and do that stuff. But, you know, I look at.
Please don't tell me 72 C10, because you just said 72 and you said Chevy. Is it a C10?
It's a C10, short bed, Cheyenne. I'll send
you pictures. I'm off this call. That is like my top five vehicles.
I had a 72 step side short bed with the wood in the bed. It was Omaha orange. Yeah. I loved it.
It's a fleet side. It's a rust copper. And I redid the bed with the Brazilian teak wood. So I'll send you guys pictures. Like, yeah, send. I'll never get rid of that truck. And it happens to be, so my dad had a C20 long bed. Now, my dad was a construction guy. And as a little kid, if I wanted to spend any time with my dad, you'd go to work with him. You're pulling hoses and setting up scaffolding. You're not playing catch in the backyard. I don't know the experience you guys had with your dad, but I loved working with my dad, and he's the hardest working guy I know. But I found that truck. We had given it away after he stopped driving. Fast forward 10 years later, I go on the hunt for that vehicle. I couldn't find it. I bought my truck, restored it. By the time I was like days to completing it, I found his truck and I bought that too. So that's my next project. But it's sitting, it's currently sitting under some tarps, but
I love your passion throughout this whole podcast. The biggest thing that I'm going to take away from our interaction with you today is your passion, not only for safety recalls, but for the industry itself. And it shines through when you talk about the old truck, right? Many dealerships struggle with, you know, to really maintain the balance between volume and profit. How can sales managers ensure their teams remain focused on both objectives effectively?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm going to take a page out of Mike Vogel, because Mike told me a long time ago, like, one of the biggest problems we have is we're chasing the numbers. We're not chasing the individual interactions that we're having with customers to really kind of understand what they're all about and what motivates them and how can we serve them. It's a different way of approaching it. And I know, like, numbers rule the world, and, you know, that's how we're supposed to be making a lot of decisions. But I would say your frontline staff, those people who are communicating and engaging customers on a daily, I would keep them away from all those numbers stuff. That's our job as, you know, fix ops director, to kind of go behind the scenes and say, like, how do the numbers all add up? But I will subscribe to Mike's, you know, premise that if you take care of the people, the numbers will take care of themselves.
Ooh, I like that.
John, I want to ask you, if you're speaking to me, I am, let's say I'm a fixed op director, and at the same time, not only am I a fixed ops director, but I'm also a sales manager. So I'm two people, okay? What type of advice would you give me to improve the collaboration between both the sales department and the service department to maximize that long-term profitability?
Ooh.
Well, I've never met a sales, like, I've been doing this, gosh, my 36 years of doing marketing and sales over. I, you know, the one thing I love about sales guys, they're super confident. The thing that I hate about sales guys is that they're super confident. Like, it's that overlap where you're not going to tell them anything. I generate revenue. You guys spend the revenue. Like, so, but I understand at the end of the day, like, you need that confidence on the front end of the store to to be bold enough to, you know, help a customer. And again, a lot of people that walk into the showroom aren't going to buy today. And so the conversion rate on the service side is so much better than the front side. Like, if I got my teeth kicked in every day, I don't know that I'd be excited. That's why I'm not a sales guy in the front end of it. And that's why I'm not trying to sell anything to anybody. Rather than saying, like, let's raise awareness about what is it that the consumer wants and the interactions that our own team should be having on the front end of the store, the back end of the stores, how do we improve that experience? I think there's a lot of opportunity. I think to sell new vehicles to vehicle owners that are in our service lane, once you begin to understand what's the work involved here, and if we're looking at a $6,000, $7,000 ticket, like, you know, I don't want to give that up as the fix ops guy, but I mean, this is an opportunity to maybe do what's best for the consumer and have at least introduce that conversation, you know, maybe even put in some policies about those loaner vehicles that if you give up for a couple of days and I give you a nice 2025, how'd you like? I mean, that's what sold, you know, my family. Like, don't give my wife a loaner vehicle because she's going to come back and say, you know, I really like that new Jeep that just came out. I was like, this Jeep that we have is nice. Well, she wants the new one. So I think those interactions, like, if we really believe in our brand, we really believe in our products, let's give customers a free swing at the plate. Like, and that's going to come through recalls, and that's going to come through loaner vehicles and free test drives and things like that. Let the vehicle and product speak for itself.
So now I'm going to switch my position. Now I'm a listener and I'm listening to this amazing podcast, right? What are three takeaways I should write down from listening to this amazing podcast? What do you think are three takeaways I should write down to put into action with my team?
Well, I mean, I get asked this all the time. You know, there's all these other people out there selling recall marketing or recall solutions out there. And there are. They're really a lot. It can be noisy and it's difficult for the average dealer to sift through it all. But they'll ask, you know, why should we go with you? And I will honestly say, and this is where the sales team will beat me up. My CEO will beat me up. I say, I'm not sure you should, because here's the reality is, if you don't have a commitment to better service and delivering an exceptional experience for consumers when they come in, all they're going to do is come in for the recall repair and you're never going to see them again. Now, we'll do our part to kind of drive retention. We've got retention solutions that follow up our recall management. But right, if they had a horrible experience at your dealership, I could send them all the great stuff in the world. Like, that's the problem with deep discounting and coupons and things like that. It's like you're exchanging a horrible servicing experience with a $50 off coupon. That's not going to make it up. I'd rather pay $50. I'd rather pay $200 more than come back to your dealership. So that's what I think we have to start taking notice of is what are the experience? I don't know if you have secret shoppers. You certainly, I'll loan you my brother. How about if I rent out my brother?
I want store. The brother on the next podcast.
Yeah, he'll be the secret shopper. He'll tell you what's wrong. So that's kind of number one is let's be honest with ourselves. And we're not looking for problems. We just want to identify what are the interactions we're having, how that might be perceived by the average consumer. The second thing is to really kind of assess, like, can we build it here? Can we do this here? Is this something that we need to outsource and find a partner who is better at it, who has all the data, who can do, like, I don't want to discuss pricing, but I'm going to tell you this. We offer a 5-to-1 guarantee, ROI guarantee. You give me $1, I'm going to give you back $5, or you don't pay until we hit those numbers. So how much money do you want to make, right? How many cars can you handle? Now, we're normally hitting 30-to-1 is our average ROI. But I'm just going to say, you know, let's start there from a pricing standpoint. But it's really about your ability to service all these vehicles in an exceptional way. And that's not just capacity, because now you've got to layer on what is the right approach to servicing these vehicles, because getting them in is the hard part. All right. And you don't want to ruin that interaction by saying, well, you know, we've got a cheap, fast way of doing things here. You want to be thorough with the job. I mean, how many times have you've taken a vehicle into a dealership and it's got, you've got, hey, the service light is on. You pick up the vehicle 3 hours later, service light is still on. Like, why isn't that happening? So I think it starts in the beginning and kind of looking at, if we could just focus on vehicle repair as a dealership, I'm willing to find a partner like a Recall Masters that can take everything else, all the data, all the technology, all the communications, all the centralized scheduling that happens with live agents. Like, if you guys could just deliver me the cars and we can focus on what we're good at, that's, I would make that recommendation, at least contemplate it. You don't have to go with Recall Masters. You could still try to do it yourself or find another partner. But at the end of the day, I think you have to look at all of those ingredients and say, what's the right fit for us?
Mm. And Sean, how can people get in touch with you?
They can find me at Sean, S-E-A-N, at recallmasters.com. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. Just type in Sean Reyes, Recall Masters, and I'm here for you guys.
Awesome. Thank you so much. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We are an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Sean, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing the passion and answering our questions and just being an amazing three-time guest. And then I'll ask this last question like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
I'd love to come back. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Eric, for having me.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with Corey Smith. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.